At Public.com, you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. And while we can't say it's officially the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's higher than Robinhood, SoFi, Wealthfront, Capital One, and the big banks, too. Ready to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash? Check out the high-yield cash account on Public.com. This is paid for by Public Investing. 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosure/high-yield-account.
Hey, Marketplace listeners, you know, around here, we like to think you're never too young to learn about the economy and financial basics. That's why we're bringing the Million Bazillion Live Tour to school to teach important lessons about budgeting, investing, saving, and more. It's all the fun of the podcast, but now live, immersive, and interactive. Special thanks to our tour partner, Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Learn more about Greenlight at greenlight.com/million. That is greenlight.com/million.
Before those finished products get into the store, well, stores gotta pay for them. And if it's more expensive for them, well, you know what happens then. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Austin, Texas, I'm Andy Ullern for Kai Rizdahl. It's Thursday, August 11th. Good to have you along, everybody. We got some economic data from the Labor Department today, and it tells us a little bit more about inflation. In something of a surprise, we learned that the July Producer Price Index declined from June. Now, PPI dropped 0.5%. Analysts had been expecting it to rise 0.2%. So you may be asking yourself, why do you gotta know about PPI? After all, we told you yesterday that inflation was basically flat for July after we got the Consumer Price Index, the CPI numbers. Well, acronyms and economic weeds aside, turns out the PPI might give you a glimpse into what you'll be paying for goods and services in the very near future. Marketplace's Lily Jamali explains.
The Producer Price Index tracks the change in prices that businesses charge one another for the inputs that go into making a product you might eventually buy at a store near you, says Gus Fauché. He's the chief economist at PNC Financial Services Group.
If producer prices are going up, that means it's more likely that consumer prices are going up.
The market for commodities, especially energy, helps explain why producer prices fell in July for the first time in 2 years, says Charles Lieberman, chief investment officer at Advisors Capital Management.
We've seen that most commodities, they had risen quite dramatically. They're lower now, and that will show up in producer prices.
And ultimately, the prices we consumers pay for everything from food to clothing. This is all a little personal for Leah Brooks. She teaches public policy at George Washington University, and she was, until recently, in the market for a new vehicle.
My husband and I have two cars, and our older car just died a spectacular death and just decided it wasn't going anymore.
With supply chain problems affecting the price of car parts, car makers are paying more and then charging more.
We really needed a car right now. So we were willing to pay the currently inflated price of cars to buy a new car.
A consumer who's less desperate for a particular good or service might not be willing to pay more. So while the Producer Price Index offers useful hints at what's next for consumers, Brooks says it's not a perfect forecast. I'm Lily Jamali for Marketplace.
On Wall Street today, not a whole lot of action. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. Lily just told us about the Producer Price Index, the PPI. Well, we want to tell you something about that we learned yesterday from the latest CPI, Consumer Price Index numbers. Turns out over the past 12 months, the cost of housing has gone up by almost 6%. And according to advocates for those experiencing homelessness, that means more people ended up losing their homes. The Department of Housing and Urban Development put out a study a couple of years ago that found that for every $100 a month that rent increases, homelessness rises by 9%. Advocates say they've been seeing that play out over the past few years, that more people have become homeless in part because of rising housing costs. At the same time, law enforcement around the country has been cracking down on tent encampments. Recently, both Missouri and Tennessee passed laws making it illegal to sleep outside on state land. Marketplace's Samantha Fields reports that in Tennessee, folks can even be charged with a felony for doing it.
The day Tennessee's new ban on sleeping outside went into effect, Kayla Phillips and Juan Brito moved into their new apartment.
It's beautiful. It's got a fireplace in it. It's in a really nice area, nice setting, and I got trees on a balcony.
Brito and Phillips have been living on the streets in Nashville for years.
We've been in a tent. We were in a tent until July 1st. We moved in here, and now it's, you know what I'm saying?
It's a big weight off, Phillips says, especially now that it's illegal to live in a tent in Tennessee.
I was concerned because I've never been in trouble in my life. And if we would have stayed out there another 30 days, I could have got a Class C felony just for sleeping outside.
A lot of cities all over the country have laws against sleeping outside on public property.
We've been tracking these laws across more than 150 cities.
Eric Tarz is legal director at the National Homelessness Law Center.
Laws criminalizing camping, sleeping, sitting, lying, loitering. Laws criminalizing living in vehicles. All of those have gone up by double or triple digit percentages over the past 10 years.
In cities that are big and small, led by Republicans and Democrats. And now?
Now we are seeing a trend of it not just at the municipal level, but also these new proposals at the state level.
In the last 2 years, legislators in 7 states introduced bills to make it illegal to sleep outside on public property. 6 of them were similar to model legislation from a think tank called the Cicero Institute.
We support bills that make it illegal for people to stay on the street.
Judge Glock is director of policy and research at the Cicero Institute.
The goal, of course, is not to just arrest homeless people. What we try to do is make sure people get off the street and into shelter and services as quickly as possible.
Well, that sounds great, but what kind of tool is arrest?
Paula Foster runs Open Table Nashville, a nonprofit homeless outreach organization. She says even if arresting people isn't the goal, it doesn't help.
If you've got felony convictions on your record, who's going to rent an apartment to you? So instead of helping someone get into housing because you've arrested them for camping, you've made it more difficult for them to get into housing because you've arrested them for camping.
Foster says she would also like to get more people off the streets and into housing and services.
The problem with that is, one, we don't have housing units, and two, services have never been funded to the level they need to be.
Nashville is short at least 15,000 affordable apartments, Foster says, and there aren't nearly enough shelter beds either.
You have about 800 shelter beds available here in Nashville on any given night, 800, maybe 1,000 if you really want to stretch it. But if you've got, you know, up to 20,000 people who are experiencing homelessness, well, there's nowhere for people to go.
Near Knoxville, Tennessee, Chris Taylor at the Tennessee Valley Coalition to End Homelessness says people who had been living in tent encampments in the city have started moving into more rural areas.
We're finding that they've moved either deeper up into the woods or moved to a different location because, you know, they don't want to either get arrested or run out of where they are.
Which makes it harder to get food and services to people, Taylor says. Long term, he and other advocates for the homeless say the solution is to build more affordable housing. In the short term, Diane Yantel at the National Low Income Housing Coalition says states and cities actually have a lot of money right now from the COVID relief packages that they could use to get people into temporary housing.
Moving people to safer alternatives like hotels and motels, which is something that we did during the pandemic and should continue to do, certainly as encampments are growing.
In Nashville, Kayla Phillips and Juan Brito still have a lot of friends living in a big tent encampment in the city.
But the thing is, for how long? I've been hearing through the grapevine, there's homeless people in other counties have already been getting arrested.
People don't know where to go, Brito says, and it can take years to get a voucher for affordable housing. He and Phillips first applied for one 4 years ago. I'm Samantha Fields for Marketplace.
In a lot of the country, kids are already heading back to school, and they'll soon be going back to the classroom everywhere else. At least, they're supposed to be. According to the U.S. Department of Education, more than 70% of public schools reported an increase in chronic absenteeism in the latest school year, meaning more students are missing at least one school day every 2 weeks, which has consequences beyond notes home to parents. It's not only bad for those students, but their schools receive less funding as a result of all that skipping. Marketplace's Stephanie Hughes reports that as a result, school leaders are trying to think creatively about how to get kids to stop cutting class.
Tomorrow is the first day of classes at Washington Marion Magnet High School in Lake Charles, Louisiana. And tomorrow morning at 6:30, students are going to get a wake-up call from Principal Ronnie Harvey Jr.
Hey, good morning, everybody. This is Mr. Harvey. I just want to make sure that you're up and you're ready to be the best Charger Indian you could possibly be. Attendance is important. This is
Harvey texts students, too. He also meets with parents in the community about the importance of attending school. He says in the wake of the pandemic, up to 30% of students might be absent on any given day.
Attendance is bigger than when it used to just be, you know, hey, you wake up, eat breakfast, go to school. Now there's so many factors as far as what's going on inside the home.
Like family members might be sick or kids might be working a job instead of going to class. Also, some families have just gotten out of the habit.
The expectation of going to school every day seems to have diminished.
Kevin Brown leads the Texas Association of School Administrators. Average daily attendance determines how much money schools get from the state.
So you may have 22 students in an elementary class, but if only 18 of them show up, then you're only being funded for 18, even though your costs are really for 22.
Other schools are funded based on how many people show up on a particular day. Dana Chambers is with the education nonprofit WestEd.
And the kids are there or the kids are not there, and that's the day. And so you can imagine with attendance being variable that that could really impact your per pupil funding.
So some school leaders are visiting homes or offering pizza parties to classes with the highest attendance. Anything to get kids to show up. I'm Stephanie Hughes for Marketplace.
The tribal gaming industry took a major hit in the early days of the pandemic. Lots of casinos were shut down and people just weren't comfortable going out. But it's rebounded dramatically. We got a report yesterday from the National Indian Gaming Commission that tribal casinos brought in a record $39 billion in 2021. That's up 40% from 2020 and up 13% from pre-pandemic levels. Marketplace Savannah Marr reports on what it all means for the tribal governments that run those casinos.
Gaming tribes rely on casino revenue to fund their government operations, pay for social services, and keep their citizens employed. So when the casinos all shut down in March of 2020,
there was a lot of apprehension, a lot of uncertainty.
Michael Morgan heads up the Oklahoma Indian Gaming Commission. He says,
the goal is not just to reopen. We knew we had to do it in the right way.
Tribal hotels and casinos became leaders in COVID safety, with strict masking and social distancing rules and new investments in mobile gaming. And that paid off, says Jonadev Chowdhury, ambassador for the Muskogee Nation and former chair of the National Indian Gaming Commission.
Because of that preparation, Indian Country was a natural place for recreation when people needed to start living life again.
That pent-up demand helped the industry recover, says Stephen Light, who studies tribal gaming at the University of North Dakota.
People are interested in getting out socializing. They're also interested in some of the new kinds of opportunities, notably for sports wagering,
which many gaming tribes started offering in the last few years. But Light says the benefits aren't felt equally across Indian Country.
That was the case before the pandemic. It's more striking with these current numbers,
which show the industry rebounding most strongly on the coasts. Light says the most rural gaming tribes are still getting back on their feet, like the Menominee tribe in northern Wisconsin, whose chairman is Ron Korn.
We just recently reopened our table games. Everybody's struggling for employees.
And that, he says, is the biggest barrier to a full recovery. I'm Savannah Marr for Marketplace. Thank you.
coming up.
Luckily, we haven't had a big fire around here lately.
Well, that's good to hear. First, though, let's do the numbers. The Dow Jones Industrial Average rose 27 points, less than a tenth of a percent, to close at 33,336. The NASDAQ lost 74 points, almost six-tenths of a percent, to finish at 12,779. The S&P 500 gave back 2 points, less than a tenth of a percent, to end at 4207. Banks moved higher after today's PPI report that Lily was just telling us about, showed inflation was softening. JPMorgan Chase added 1 4/10 of a percent. Wells Fargo grew 2%. Bank of America improved nearly 2 4/10 of a percent. And Americans are moving. A new report from Redfin shows that a record 33.7% of its users were looking to move from one metro to another last month. That was up from 32.6% in the previous quarter. Bond prices fell. The yield on the 10-year T-note rose to 2.88%. You're listening to Marketplace.
Looking for the highest interest rate on your cash? At Public.com, you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. And while we can't say it's officially the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's a higher rate than Robinhood, a higher rate than SoFi, a higher rate than Marcus, a higher rate than Wealthfront, frankly, a higher rate than Capital One, a higher rate than Ally, a higher rate than Barclays, a way higher rate than Bank of America and Chase, a higher rate than Citi, Wells Fargo, Discover, and it's a higher rate than American Express, too. So if you want to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash, check out public.com. We can't say it's the highest interest rate, but it's pretty darn up there. This is paid for by Public Investing, 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosure/high-yield-account.
And now a word from our sponsors at Betterment. Do you want your money to dream big? Do you want your money to be a total self-starter? Are you annoyed that your money doesn't work hard enough? Don't worry. Betterment is here to help. Betterment is the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Their automated technology is built to help maximize returns. Meaning, when you invest with Betterment, your money can auto-adjust as you get closer to your goal. Rebalance if your portfolio gets too far out of line, and your dividends are automatically reinvested. That can increase the potential for compound returns. In other words, your money is breaking a sweat while you can be breaking bread. You'll never picture your money the same way again. Betterment, the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Visit Betterment.com to get started. Investing involves risk. Performance is not guaranteed.
This is Marketplace. I'm Andy Euler. These things called weapons detection screening systems are starting to pop up around the country. Basically, they're metal detectors 2.0. Disney World and Six Flags have them, and more kids walk through them every day on their way to the classroom. And some city leaders are hoping the technology can be used to cut down on gun violence. And as WDET's Eli Newman reports, in Detroit, that means bringing security checkpoints to public spaces.
It's not quite dark yet, but crowds of people are heading to the riverfront in downtown Detroit to get a good view of the annual fireworks show. It's the first one since the pandemic started, and thousands have shown up to watch. Tony Semenek came down from one of Detroit's suburbs. He says it's been a while since he's seen the show.
Every year that you come down here, they let fireworks off, and you don't know if they're gunshots. This is the first time I've been down here in 6 years.
And there's a big difference at the fireworks show this year. The Detroit Police Department sectioned off the best place to watch them and created a temporary weapons detection zone. Before people enter, they have to go through a weapons detection checkpoint. There are rows of these gates with little cameras on them as people walk past to be screened. Talia Brown is there working for a private security company hired to manage the system for the fireworks. She watches a tablet to see if it flags anyone.
This is my first time working these, but I'm good with technology, so...
Most people flow through without a problem. There are hardly any lines. But the system flags plenty of spectators. Brown points to an alert on her tablet. It's a video loop that shows an orange box appearing on someone's wagon passing through. That means there could be weapons.
As you can see, it's set it up. 1, 2, 3. All in the same area.
Brown does her own search and doesn't find anything. She says metal folding chairs have been causing false alarms all day.
The chairs go off, period.
But other times, Brown says the weapons detection system works well. While we're talking, Lulu Ganim walks through the checkpoint and gets flagged. She's asked by security and then police to step aside. She has a firearm in her purse.
I'm a state trooper. I work the road. I have to carry it off duty.
They let her go. Ganim says it's a small inconvenience.
We need everyone to feel safe and secure, and if that's what's gonna get us there, then that's a great thing to have.
Earlier this year, the city paid more than $1.3 million to a Massachusetts-based company called Evolve Technology for the weapons detection gates. Co-founder Mike Ellenbogen says Evolve allows 3,600 people to go through these checkpoints every hour.
That's one person a second. We want to make the system red light, green light, simple.
Ellenbogen says Evolve gates use magnetic field sensors to screen and categorize objects, but it's not 100% accurate. Ellenbogen says the system's AI sometimes confuses some everyday items for threats.
In the event of a piece of tubular steel, that could be a gun barrel, or it could be the leg of a folding chair.
Still, business has been good. The company is steadily growing its list of subscribers. Thousands of Evolve gates are used at museums, schools, and stadiums across the country. And in Detroit, the police department is more directly involved. The city's mayor, Mike Duggan, says he wants to use the checkpoints outside at social gatherings, like nightclubs and block parties.
We don't want to arrest you. We're telling you ahead of time it's going to be there. Leave your gun at home.
While some are concerned about the increased surveillance, others say they like the new technology. Demetrius Jackson lives near the fireworks show. He says he doesn't make a habit of going outside in large crowds like this.
Like, usually it wasn't that much security down here. And now I have enough security and I don't think nothing really can go bad, you feel me?
By the end of the show, the Detroit Police Department arrested 4 people for carrying concealed weapons. Security guards say they let others leave before it got to that point. In any case, the Evolve system is likely to remain a fixture at events that attract big crowds. In Detroit, I'm Eli Newman for Marketplace.
As of today, there are some 69 large wildfires burning in the United States. That's according to the National Interagency Fire Center. Wildfire season in the U.S. is longer and more intense than ever. In fact, some firefighters don't even call it wildfire season anymore. It's year-round. And because of that, the amount of money that people put toward protecting their homes from fire is growing. Now, one segment you might not necessarily think of when you think of fire prevention, tree trimming, has grown into a nearly $30 billion industry. The Mountain West News Bureau's Caleb Radel caught up with some folks trying to help do what they can to fireproof some neighborhoods.
In a community tucked in the foothills of Reno, Nevada, a work crew slashes at brush at the perimeter of homes. These aren't your average Joe's weed whackers. These are high-powered trimmers that send leaves and branches flying everywhere. The crew is with a company called Wilderness Forestry. It's hired by property owners to create what's known as defensible space, a buffer between buildings and the flammable brush and vegetation around it. Bill Stewart is the company's defensible space inspector.
A lot of times when the developers build the homes, you know, they build them right on top of each other and there's not a whole lot of space in between them.
Stewart says that's why it's all the more important that the space between homes isn't flammable.
To make sure if a fire does start, it's not just going to continue to rip through the whole community.
And that threat has heightened in the drought-stricken West, where more than 6 million acres burned in wildfires last year. That's roughly the size of Vermont. At the job in Reno, foreman Dustin Carlson uses trimmers on unruly sagebrush. He sees his work as the first line of defense to help firefighters.
Giving them a safe area to get in and lay hoses behind houses, clearing on sides of driveways to make sure their trucks are safe, and getting in and giving them a chance to fight the fire safely.
Wildfire threats in the West have increased as more people move into what's known as the wildland-urban interface. That's where development and wildland collide. 69% of buildings destroyed by wildfires in the U.S. were built in this interface. In fact, more than a third of the nation's homes are in these zones, according to Jessica Gardetto with the National Interagency Fire Center.
And unfortunately, a lot of people are moving to these areas who may not be familiar with wildfire and how quickly fires can move, how damaging they can be if you don't have survivable space around your home.
Gardetto says that's why fire agencies are trying to get the word out about creating defensible space and maintaining it. In some parts of the country, it's mandatory. California orders homeowners in fire hazard areas to maintain 100 feet of defensible space around structures. But, Gardetto says, some people don't comply because they think it'll make their yards look empty and ugly.
And that's really not the case. It's just mostly about spacing out the existing plants that you have and keeping them green.
Other homeowners just can't afford it. A 2019 study found that the cost of maintaining defensible space is the biggest challenge for those trying to meet the requirements in California specifically. Recently, the U.S. Forest Service did announce funding to help at-risk communities plan for and mitigate wildfire risks. In some cases, private landowners are eligible. But sometimes it's up to the homeowners to do the work themselves or hire contractors like Steward with Wilderness Forestry. But good luck booking him.
It's tough for us to keep up with demand. A lot of phone calls. We're probably, you know, 6 months out right now so far as taking on any new business.
Steward says the company is on track to double its annual revenue and number of contracts. So far, there haven't been any major summer blazes near Reno this year. But he's watched as California fires push smoke into the area.
Luckily, we haven't had a big fire around here lately.
But, he adds, it's not a matter of if the region experiences a large wildfire, it's when. I'm Caleb Bradle for Marketplace.
This final note on the way out today, we learned this week that perhaps the greatest athlete of all time, Serena Williams, is going to hang up her tennis shoes and retire. Now let's run the Serena numbers real quick. 23 Grand Slam victories, 14 doubles Grand Slam trophies with her sister Venus. She's got 4 Olympic golds, and she's made decent money doing it too. $94.6 million in career earnings on the court, not to mention more than a dozen sponsors, her own fashion line, her own investment business, Serena Ventures. There's no telling what's next. Here is your moment of economic context. We learned today from the Labor Department that 262,000 people filed for unemployment for the first time last week. That was up slightly from the week before, also the second weekly increase in a row. But this time last year, that same Department of Labor reported that 416,000 people filed for first-time claims. So I gotta tell you, all things considered, it looks like a strong labor market. Amir Babawi, John Buckley, Eve Epstein, John Gordon, Rick Carr, Diantha Parker, Amanda Peacher, and Stephanie Seek are the Marketplace editing staff. I'm Andy Euler. We'll be back tomorrow, everybody. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.